It's Thursday, April 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, we'll look at the race for president here in the United States.
Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are well on their way to getting, at least if not a first ballot nomination, getting very close.
President Obama meets with GCC allies in Saudi Arabia. We'll hear about a program that teaches school children how to use their money. And Iggy Azalea has a new CD and a new single, but that's not why she's in the news. That's all coming up on VOA's International Edition. Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are now looking to new elections in five states next week after scoring decisive wins in Tuesday's New York primaries. After winning almost all of New York's Republican convention delegates on Tuesday, Trump declared the race for the nomination was almost over.
We don't have much of a race anymore, based on what I'm seeing on television. Senator Cruz is just about mathematically eliminated.
Meanwhile, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton seemed all but assured of her nomination when she greeted supporters in New York.
The race for the Democratic nomination is in the home stretch, and victory is in sight.
Republican Ted Cruz, campaigning Wednesday in Pennsylvania, one of the states that holds primaries next Tuesday, said that Trump's victory lap is a little premature.
Upon winning his home state, Donald, with a characteristic display of humility, declared this race is over. Manhattan has spoken. And if the rest of the voters would quietly go home now and allow him to give the general election to Hillary, all would be better.
Trump has, by one count, 845 convention delegates of the 1,237 majority figure he would need to claim the nomination. Senator Cruz has 559. Ohio Governor John Kasich has 147. Elaine Kmark is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington. She's also the author of Primary Politics, Everything You Need to Know About How America Nominates Its Presidential Candidates. She says that though Trump is leading, he is far from being the nominee.
On the Republican side, Donald Trump is still somewhat away from getting the magic number, and there's some indication that people may want to try and stop him at the convention. And so that might be a little bit more contentious.
In the Democratic race, Clinton needs 2,383 convention delegates to win the party's nomination. After her New York victory, she has 1,930 delegates, far ahead of her challenger, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who has 1,189. Kmark says that though Clinton has the lead, trust is a big issue, and it could sway so-called superdelegates who can vote for either candidate at the convention.
I mean, the question is, will something happen that makes Sanders a powerful enough candidate to be able to say to the superdelegates, yeah, you should come to the convention and vote for me? So far, that hasn't happened, but obviously it's possible.
Five states hold primaries next Tuesday: Pennsylvania, Maryland, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Delaware. Elaine Kmark says that even if Trump and Clinton score wins, the race might not be decided for several weeks.
I think that this probably goes through May, maybe all the way to the California primary in June. And that's a big one, because on the Republican side, that's a winner-take-all primary. And of course, California, being the biggest state in the union, has the most delegates on the Democratic side and on the Republican side.
Elaine Kmark is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and the author of Primary Politics, Everything You Need to Know About How America Nominates Its Presidential Candidates. You can follow all of our coverage of Campaign 2016 by logging on to our website, voanews.com. Turning now to our social media segment, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins us to talk about what's buzzing online about the campaign. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave.
So Donald Trump scored a big win this past Tuesday.
He did, and he's focusing now on the Midwest. He tweeted, "Off to Indiana, hashtag Trump2016. Trump's biggest opponent for now is Ted Cruz. He's urging for a debate before the Pennsylvania primary next Tuesday on Twitter and tagged Donald Trump in that tweet. Overall, the key word among the three GOP contenders appears to be mathematically. Ted Cruz first used that word in an interview to imply that John Kasich does not stand a chance and should drop out of the race. The other candidates are now using that word to describe his chances. Trump tweeted, "Ted Cruz is mathematically out of winning the race. Now all he can do is be a spoiler, never a nice thing to do. I will beat Hillary." Kasich tweeted, "Now that Cruz is mathematically eliminated, the only difference between him and Kasich is Kasich can defeat Clinton."
Well, speaking of the former Secretary of State, she won big in New York as well.
That's right.
What did she have to say on Twitter on Wednesday?
She's sending more tweets signed with H at the end, which means they are written by her and not her staffers. One of her latest tweets is on the Flint water crisis. She wrote, "It's important that people are held accountable for water poisoning in Flint, but Congress needs to act now to help Flint families." Although she won the New York primary Tuesday, Sanders defeated her in nearly every state county. Many of his supporters are criticizing the mainstream media for not covering that enough, and others still argued votes are the only means of declaring a winner. Counties don't matter.
So what else is trending?
The soon-to-be-the-new face of a $20 bill in America. The bills in America will get a makeover from featuring former President Andrew Jackson to slavery abolitionist Harriet Tubman. Back to you, Dave.
That is social media reporter G. Abby Lee. She tweets for our program's account at @VOA_IE. That's also where you can send your 140 characters to us. And you can follow G on her account at G. Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. Coming up, President Obama meets with Gulf allies and teaching kids how to manage money before they need to know. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama and Saudi Arabia's King Salman agreed on the importance of an inclusive approach to de-escalating regional conflicts. Following a two-hour closed meeting in Riyadh Wednesday, they issued a statement. The White House said the two leaders discussed the challenges posed by Iran's provocative activities in the region. As VOA's White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas told us, differing priorities, countering Iran versus fighting the Islamic State group, have made the U.S.-Saudi relationship tense in recent weeks.
The United States' most pressing issue is to combat Islamic State and al-Qaeda. Saudi Arabia and other Arab states feel like the biggest issue is Iran and its destabilizing actions. The proxy wars it's fighting by feeding weapons to groups like the Houthis in Yemen, where the country's just fallen apart. And so the U.S. position is that's taking the tension away from the real global threat, and that's Islamic State and al-Qaeda. So As long as those two differences remain fundamentally, then the tensions between the two sides, or the disagreements, the intense disagreements, will continue, even though they're both committed to being allies and really the very same issues, both countering terrorism.
Later today, President Obama will meet with the Gulf Cooperation Council members, including Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Bahrain, and Oman. Mariela Salinas said White House officials expect President Obama and GCC leaders to look at ways to step up cooperation and align their policies and approaches in areas of mutual interest, including countering terrorism and promoting peace and stability in places like Yemen and Syria.
Many analysts feel it's more of a reassurance to the public to come together and to reassure each nation that we are communicating, we are cooperating, we are working together, we are discussing things, even though we have disagreement, because really the situation is just a mess in the Middle East, in Iraq, in Iran, you know, Islamic State spreading beyond the borders. But the truth is, any solution, which, you know, the U.S. wants it to be a political solution, not going to be an easy one, and there's no clear path forward at this point. What is the real, there have been some delicate and fragile ceasefires in Yemen and in Syria, but what is the game plan going forward? And the truth is, in the U.S., this is a presidential election, so Obama's here, and he's going to be in office just a few more months. And so a lot of the Arab allies want to know what they're dealing with and the level of commitment, especially in terms of defense. So at the end of it, maybe just some added military assistance, but no major breakthroughs expected at all.
VOA White House correspondent Mariela Salinas. White House officials say the assistance will include a simplified process for transferring defense capabilities to Gulf nations, plans to boost the GCC's ballistic defense missile system, and increased defense against cyber threats. The UN Refugee Agency has confirmed reports that up to 500 people have lost their lives when an overcrowded boat capsized and sank earlier this month in the Mediterranean Sea between Libya and Italy. The incident reportedly happened April 8th. On Monday, witnesses and survivors told VOA's Somali service a smuggler's vessel overturned while carrying as many as 500 people. They said an unknown number swam to boats nearby and were taken to Greece. Citing survivor accounts, UNHCR spokesman William Spindler said Wednesday a boat attempting to transfer passengers to a larger ship capsized and sank.
We understand that about 100 to 200 people left Tobruk in Libya on the way to Italy, and they were being transferred by the smugglers who were in command of their boat to a larger vessel that was already carrying hundreds of people. And while they were doing this in the middle of the sea at night, the bigger vessel went down, and all the people, practically all of those who were on board, drowned. And a few people survived, those who had not been transferred yet, and they were drifting for 3 days at sea until they were rescued by a cargo ship and taken to Greece, where we were able to interview them.
The United Nations says that those rescued include 37 men, 3 women, and a 3-year-old child, all from African countries, with the majority from Somalia, with others from Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt. Close to 180,000 refugees and migrants have reached Europe by sea across the Mediterranean and Aegean this year, escaping war and poverty in their home countries for a better life in prosperous northern Europe. Many have Germany as their most favored destination. At least 760 people have died or gone missing attempting the journey this year. Here in the United States, Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette says criminal charges leveled against 2 state regulators and a city employee in the Flint, Michigan water crisis are just the beginning. The 3 government officials, Stephen Bush and Michael Prisby of the Department of Environmental Quality, and Michael Glasgow, an employee of the city of Flint working at the water treatment plant, were charged in state court Wednesday with evidence tampering and several other felonies and misdemeanors. Schuette told reporters that the workers failed to discharge their duties.
Mr. Bush and Mr. Prisby misled federal and local authorities, regulatory officials, and failed to provide safe and clean water to families of Flint.
Almost 18 months ago, officials switched Flint's water source from the Detroit municipal system to the Flint River in a money-saving move. However, the water was not treated to reduce corrosion, and lead from aging pipes began to dissolve into people's drinking water. Flint has been under a state of emergency for 4 months while residents use filters and bottled water. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder announced last October that Flint would again get its water from the Detroit municipal system. By the time the city began getting its water from Detroit, dangerously high levels of lead had been found in the blood of some residents, including children, who are particularly susceptible to lead exposure, which can result in lower IQs and behavioral problems. Coming up, we'll visit a special kind of classroom to teach kids how to manage money. And Iggy Azalea has a new CD and a new song, but the same boyfriend. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. You might have heard the phrase, money does not grow on trees. Maybe your parents said something similar. But since 1965, the Junior Achievement Organization has been working with local businesses to teach students of all ages about money, where it really comes from, and how to handle it. Writer Fazda El-Masri joined a group of middle schoolers as they got a chance to walk in their parents' shoes for a few hours, earning money and making their own decisions about spending or saving it.
This is not a regular school day, but what these middle schoolers are going to learn today might stay with them for life. They're on a field trip to J.A. Finance Park near Washington. The facility is designed like a shopping mall.
So when the students come here, we make it fun and interactive.
Ed Grenier is J.A. of Greater Washington's president and CEO.
We start by teaching the students for about 14 hours in the classroom, in-depth curriculum, financial institutions, how do they work, what's debit, what's credit, all the different types of taxes. We teach them what a budget is and what the different budget lines are.
He says the program targets middle schoolers because this is the age when kids' spending habits start to form. On this trip, students learn about the adults they'll pretend to be for the day.
We give them a life situation where they are 42, married, have 3 kids, and they make this much money. And they have to go through the day and create a monthly budget. And there's a lot of aha moments here, I can tell you that. They learn that if I have 2 kids, I need a bigger car than a 2-door convertible. They need a bigger house. So our biggest takeaway we want the students to have here is really take it seriously, save money, and we do it in a fun, engaging way.
14-year-old Paola Ventura is given a life situation where she is a 34-year-old single mother of 2 kids. Now she has to plan a budget that covers all the family needs. There are a lot of surprises along the way.
The amount of money we have to spend for certain things like childcare and insurance. I had an idea that it would be like kind of hard, but like I never grasped on to like what my mom was doing when she spent, so I never noticed like too much.
JA's programs target students not only in the U.S., but worldwide as well.
We have 4.5 million students in America. We have almost 10 million around the world learning financial literacy.
This program is run through a partnership with Capital One, a financial institution. Spokesman Ryan Smart explains the reason behind the collaboration.
We truly believe that financial literacy is in the same areas as reading, writing, and arithmetic as being one of those core educational components that students need in order to be successful in the future.
Capital One employees serve as instructors.
In our 10-year partnership with Junior Achievement, we've had about 10,000 associates who have actually come out and volunteered at their locations across the country. It allows them to get out and volunteer, but also to serve as a mentor, serve as a leader for middle school kids, and provide them those foundational skills that they'll need for the future.
14-year-old Muhammad Abbas says taking part in the program today was an eye-opener.
Bills and managing your checkbook is harder than it seems.
He says he's happy he learned those lessons before starting a summer job in a few months.
It just taught me not to waste my money. Just because something's new doesn't necessarily mean it's better.
And it's always better to spend less than you earn. That's the lesson program organizers hope these kids will remember for the rest of their lives. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Australian singer Iggy Azalea, has been in the news recently for more of her on-again, off-again relationship with fiancé Nick Young than anything else. But she also has a new CD, Digital Distortion, and a new single, Team, that is making its way back up the Billboard Hot 100 chart. International Edition's Susan Yockey spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the CD and about Iggy's offstage life as well.
Iggy Azalea is from Australia. She has been on the music scene for several years now, although she, you know, says that she's been rapping and making music for many years, but she was discovered with her big chart hit called Fancy several years ago. She was supposed to go on tour last year. The tour ended up being canceled. She wasn't very happy with the outcome of the album, so she delayed the release of the album. Her new album is called Digital Distortion. It is due out in a few months, and she's also announced that she will be rescheduling the tour that was canceled, so she hopes to go out on the road and promote the new album, Digital Distortion. She has been in the news a lot lately because of her relationship with a Los Angeles Laker professional basketball player whose name is Nick Young, who admitted that he cheated on Iggy.
You've always got the best stories.
I've got the dirt. So she hasn't been seen with her wedding engagement ring on recently, and she was asked just this week, what's the status of your relationship? And on Monday she tweeted, we are still together, we are still a couple. We're sorting things out, and I would ask that everyone respect my privacy at this very delicate, sensitive time.
Yes, I can understand that. Well, there's one song in particular you like.
Well, I like all of Iggy Azalea's stuff, but the new song that's made it to the charts from her upcoming album is a song called Team.
It's my time wherever I go. I took a chance like I'm from Chicago. 100+ in that Mercy, and I go. About to go, turn it to the taco.
Well, tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, it's got a lot of hip-hop and some rap. She's got a guest rapper on the song with her, and that's very typical of what Iggy does. She's guested with a number of different performers over the years. She's performed along with Ariana Grande and quite a few others. And so this new song is the first single from the upcoming album, Digital Distortion. I'm looking forward to the album. It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
Well, if she's so particular, she should be particular about her men, too, maybe.
Well, yes, but her man cheated on her. That's the story, and he admitted it on video. Now, there's a bit of a controversy as to who leaked the video. There was a story that Nicki Minaj was behind leaking that video.
She comes out all over the place.
Yeah, she's a tattletale. Well, yeah, Nicki Minaj is everywhere. But anyway, I like Iggy Azalea. Iggy Azalea was also quoted recently as saying one of the ways that she got through the stressful situation of what's been going on is horseback riding.
Huh.
And she went horseback riding with a music friend of hers who's also been going through a stressful situation, Kesha. So the two of them have kind of buddied up. And they've been horseback riding as of late. But exciting times for Iggy Azalea from Australia. Her new album's about to be released.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry. Always love for you to come on by.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Washington's first envoy for gay rights says there is an emerging consensus worldwide that LGBT persons should enjoy the same rights as everyone else. Randy Berry said Wednesday that his first year on the job was extraordinary, with countries around the world taking positive steps to ensure the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people. He notably welcomed advances in Vietnam, Nepal, Mozambique, and Botswana. But despite the positive notes, Barry warned that we live in a world where nearly 80 countries still criminalize LGBT conduct or relations. He singled out Russia and Nigeria as examples where the governments use LGBTI issues as a political wedge to bolster their own position. Barry is tasked with helping countries coordinate U.S. strategy on rights for the LGBT community, as well as to highlight such issues around the world. As G. Abby Lee mentioned in our social media segment earlier, African-American abolitionist and humanitarian Harriet Tubman, who led hundreds of slaves to freedom, will replace President Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew confirmed Wednesday that Tubman will be the first African-American featured on U.S. currency and the first woman on paper currency in more than 100 years. The last one was Martha Washington. Lew originally announced his intention to put a woman on the $10 bill last June, but scrapped that plan in part because of the popularity of the Pulitzer Prize-winning musical Hamilton on Broadway. Andrew Jackson was the 7th president of the United States. He will now be moved to the back of the $20 bill and incorporated as part of the existing image of the White House. Mr. Jackson's stock has fallen in recent years because he did own slaves and was responsible for the Indian Removal Act of 1830, which started what was known as the Trail of Tears, a forced migration on which thousands of Native Americans died. Thank you for joining us for VOA's International Edition. We welcome your questions or comments on our program. Find us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Tracy Carter directed our program. Zubair El-Tayeb was our engineer. For everyone else here at VOA, I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Jamal Mohammed al-Badawi is a fugitive who was wanted in connection with the October 2000 attack on the USS Cole, a U.S. naval vessel moored at the time in the harbor of Aden, Republic of Yemen. A Yemeni native, al-Badawi is a small man, standing 5'5" tall with black hair and dark eyes, and weighs about 175 pounds. He is 48 years old and also known as Jamal Mushin al-Tali, Abu Abdal Rahman al-Adani, and Jamal Mohammed Ahmad. The attack on the USS Cole resulted in the deaths of 17 American sailors. For this and other actions, al-Badawi is charged with murder, conspiracy to use weapons of mass destruction, providing material support for terrorist groups, and other crimes. He was being held by Yemeni authorities in connection with the attack when he escaped in April 2003. He was recaptured the next year, but escaped again in February 2006. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to al-Badawi's arrest or prosecution. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on this man, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to rfj@state.gov.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
It's for, what's your